Hi, everyone. Welcome to a special episode of the Wine Pair Podcast, where I give Carmela a little break, and I get the chance to interview people who are actually involved in making wine. This week, I am talking to Rita Pinto, CEO of Quinta do Pinto Winery in Portugal, and also Dale and Stephen Ott, owners of Nossa Imports, who are helping to bring wines from Rita and other winemakers in both Portugal and Mexico into the United States. So stay tuned for this wonderful and enlightening interview. Hello, and welcome to the Wine Pair Podcast. I'm Joe, your sommelier of a reasonably priced wine, and for this episode, I am on my own, as my wine pairing partner in crime is taking care of other things, probably making cakes for her baby cakes business. Now, as a quick orientation to our podcast, what we usually do in each episode is learn about, taste, and review three wines that are reasonably priced, which means under $20 and should be easy to find. However, for this special set of episodes, we will interview people who are involved in actually making wine. So part of what we want to do in this podcast is educate ourselves and you on different aspects of winemaking and knowledge in a fun and entertaining and unstuffy way. And that's what we're going to do in this episode. In a minute, you'll hear my interview with Rita Pinto of Quinta do Pinto and Dale and Stephen Ott of Nossa Imports. And a small plug before we get to our interview. If you like what you're hearing or are interested in hearing our other regular episodes, please subscribe to our podcast so you can hear more, especially since you're only getting one half of the Wine Pair Podcast in this episode with me. So let's get to our interview with Rita. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Wine Pair Podcast. We have a great group of people here today, and we're really excited to talk to them. I'm joined by Dale and Stephen Ott from Nossa Imports and special guest Rita Pinto from Quinta do Pinto Winery, who's our special guest and the focus of our interview today. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity to be on Wine Pair. And thank you, Dale and Stephen, for bringing the wines over to you so that we could make this all possible. Thank you to all.
We're happy to be here.
Yes.
That's great. So before we talk to Rita, I do want to hand the virtual microphone over to the Otts to give us a little bit of information about their company, Nossa Imports, and how they're bringing great wines to the U.S. from Mexico and Portugal, and where we can buy their wines. So Dale and Stephen, take it away.
Yes. So yes, very excited to be on the show. And we are we're a sommelier husband and wife couple who are running a wine import company, like you said, called Nossa Imports. And we're importing the wines of Mexico and Portugal. Really, what we found in our years of working in the wine industry as floor sommeliers, as buyers, as distributors, and as producers, we found that there was a lot of the global story of wine missing in sort of the five or six countries that we really hear and see and experience on a regular basis internationally. And we found a lot of what was missing in Portugal and Mexico. You know, Portugal in particular, it really connects the old world with the new world. There's 4,000 years of wine growing history in the country. There are thousands of different microcosms and microclimates. And really, it's a universe of wine in and of itself. And where Rita comes into play, Quinta do Pinto is located in the Lisbon growing region of Portugal. So it's by volume, it's the largest region in the country. And she is doing some really incredible wines that are so ethically made that really, I think, portray a sense of place to that location that has so much history and clout. So really excited to be on the show with Rita and let her tell a little bit more of that story.
Yeah, we're very, very grateful for the opportunity basically to tell these stories. And Rita's family story, I think, is really compelling. And I think it really speaks to the thing that we really, really think the wine is about, which is about connecting people and connecting the stories of people to the places on earth that they're from and the land that it comes from too. So it's makes wine that are beautiful examples of that ethos, and we're incredibly grateful to be partners. To your question as to where we can find the wines, we're based in Arizona, where we sell throughout the state in a variety of spaces. We're in the process of sort of gradually expanding throughout the Western United States, in the Mountain West, and then beyond. So stay tuned for a lot of that. But we're partnering with some online retailers as well, and we can give you all that information to share with your folks later on. But
that would be great, exciting, and super. Well, thank you for the background and why you focus on wines from Mexico and Portugal. And yes, would love to know more. We'll do at the end a little bit more about how people can find your wines and some of your expansion plans. So that's fantastic.
Awesome.
All right. So now I'm going to turn our attention to Rita. Again, Rita, thank you so much for joining us today. And we're super happy to have you here. So I would love just to start talking a little bit about you. So would you mind just telling our listeners about you? You have an amazing, fascinating background. And then after we learn a little bit about you, we can talk about how you got into winemaking.
Okay, so I'm Rita. I'm the eldest of the three Pinto brothers and sisters. I am a mother of four. And so that is my biggest and most important job. And at the company, at the Pinto Winery, I am a CEO, which also means I am a seller, I am a viticulture, I am a wine blender, I am a case deliverer, I am a marketing. So, but, you know, underneath the CEO hat, there's a lot of other sub hats and caps that we use. Being a family company, we tend to reach out to everybody, pitches in whatever is needed. My initial background is management. I took management and business here in Lisbon, and I basically lived in Portugal much of my life, except when I was younger. We lived for 4 years near London, so I am. This is how I was raised. We're a very big family, a family that is lives very much around the table. So food and wine and sitting at the table is part of our family culture. And there's a Portuguese saying that around the table, you don't get old, you don't grow old. Mm-hmm. And clearly this is very much how we do not grow old in our family. This is a little bit about myself.
I love that. Around the table, you don't grow old. That's great.
Yeah.
Interested to learn a little bit more about how you got into winemaking. It seems like maybe something that was destined, but you were not always sure you were going to go into winemaking. Is that correct?
I don't think it was at all destined. My parents bought this estate about 20 years ago. It was intended to be, the intention was to have a common roof in an agricultural place, a common roof for the family, because my father's family had a property that's been in his family for five generations before him. So it was something quite old and quite precious to and quite dear to the family. But there were 15 cousins, so it was very difficult to manage. And it got to a point where the property was sold. And my father always says, what comes from the land goes back to the land. So he wanted to put that again back into the land. And again, it was born to be a family location, a family roof. But when you have 120 hectares around it, and when there's a tradition that the land is good for wine, that's how we set out to do wine. So that's very shortly how we got here. And as we live in Lisbon as a family, and my father also wanted the property to be closer to Lisbon so that we can enjoy it on the weekends and not just on the holidays. Of us three kids, I'm the eldest, as I said, and I didn't even like wine. So as I've told you, that we live around the table. So we have dinner as a family every Sunday. And it's very much about wine, cheese, and bread. This is how we live. And then we do eat something else, but it's basically around that. So wine has always been part of our gatherings and part of our family, I would say. But in these Sunday gatherings, I taste the wines, but I wouldn't appreciate them the way that my brother and sister would, or my father, of course. So I don't think that it was natural that I would be the one to go into the business. And I came into the business because we all participated on the harvest on the weekends. So we'd go there on the weekends and then we'd pick and then we'd go into the cellar and crush. So we, as a family, during September and October, that's when the harvest happens. On Saturdays and on Sundays, we would participate, but not on an ongoing thing. And it got to a point in my marketing life. So I used to work in multinational companies in marketing. And it got to a point where I wasn't very happy for a change that I'd made to a Spanish company. And I thought I wasn't going to be there for another 5 years. So I prepared my leave. And my father was very smart in the way that he never asked any of us kids to join the company. I don't think that you say no to a father. That's in my case. And anything that my parents ask, I don't think I'd be able to say no, of this dimension, of course. And then my brothers and sister, probably they'd say exactly the opposite, in the sense, okay, you say black, then I will say it's white. So I think my father was very smart in the way that he never asked us. Of course, we helped, as I said, in the harvest, and we'd help here and there, but he never asked us to join. So when I left my multinational marketing career, I set out to do a pause and just to do the harvest as a whole. So from sunrise to sunset, instead of being on weekends, just for a full harvest. And it got to a point where I suddenly just fell in love with it. I fell in love, initially astonished of how much work goes behind picking the grapes. My friends would ask me, so Rita, now you're picking your grapes in September. When will your wine be ready? And I'd say October. So this is how much or how little I knew about what I was going to do. But I was astonished as so much work and so much passion and so much dedication is behind those bunches that we picked, that then were crushed, that then were fermented, and then were aged, and then were aged in cement, and then aged in bottle, and then only many years after go into the market. I was completely astonished by that. And I fell in love with the land, basically. I fell in love with the viticulture and with nature that I've always loved, being by the sea, being by nature, much more than being in an office. So again, it wasn't destined that I would go. It wasn't destined that any of us kids would go. But it happened. I just fell in love with it. And here I am. And it's been about 15 or 16 years, to be honest. My sister, Anna, she then joined the company on the sales side. And she's the youngest. And she has a really good palate. And she did do her studies in the US in this wine world. So when she came on board, she was much more literate than I was. After some years working in the company, I went back to university to do my master's in viticulture and enology to make sure, you know, I was kind of understanding what was going on. And I had swear that I would never, ever sit in a university, a classroom ever again. But it did happen. And it was very useful to help me understand more of what was going on.
So when you went back to school, because you had been working, you had been working in the winery, when you mm-hmm. went back to school to study viticulture, you know, mm-hmm. how much had you learned by, you know, just naturally being part of the process? And then what things did you learn in the sort of academic setting that made a difference?
I think that what I learned was to give the correct names, the scientific names and the scientific processes about what was happening. For instance, I knew that we had to treat the vines, and I knew that we had to treat them, you know, every other week. And I knew that there's a conversion from grape juice to alcohol. And I knew that there was something called malolactic. I've heard, but I have no idea what it was. So basically it was to put knowledge behind names. So in the master's, basically, I attended the classroom. The class is not to be the winemaker of the house. That was not my intention. My intention was to understand what is behind it. You know, what is the ways that you can prune, the ways that you can treat products, you know, the different kind of grapes, the different kind of wine regions, the different kind. So it was much more to, I had been working there for about 2 or 3 years. And this, oh, now I understand. Oh, this is what it's called. Oh, this is... No, this is how it's been done for ages, or this is how, oh, we're not doing this right, you know. So it was much more like a confirmation. And it's interesting because I think that when you do go back to, you know, when you study, when you're a bit older, not necessarily wiser, but when you get, you know, when you have more experience, I think that things are, you know, just like boxes in your head saying, okay, check, I understand. Okay, check, this makes point sense. Okay, yeah. So it's much more like putting things in its place, putting knowledge in its place.
Yeah, that all makes sense to me. I did not exactly similar, but after being in the business world for a while, I went back and got my MBA. And I think your description makes total sense to me. You start being able to put names to things that you were already doing and maybe understand just a little bit more of why those things happen or why they're important.
So you can think. So now you can think. You can have this is how we do it. This is why. Okay, let's do it. Yeah. Let's do it in a different way, or let's try this. You have a little bit more, you know, knowledge to think in a different, more critical way also.
That's right. Well, let's talk a little bit about your wines and what you think defines Pinto as a, you know, as a winemaking, as a winery. What makes, you know, what are some things that make the wine special? I know you do sustainable farming, et cetera, but would love to hear more about the story of, you know, your wines.
So the story began many years before us. So to be honest, the story began in the 17th century. The wines that were produced in their estate, people would pay one more Pinto point. So Pinto was the currency of Portugal in the 17th century. And the wines that were produced there, people would pay, you know, a Pinto coin, which is kind of a coincidence because Pinto is our family surname. So what we found is that we did wine at the estate because that was what the estate was good for. So we don't think that we were like geniuses to find, you know, to figure out that, oh, the wine was going to be great. It was just nature that had already said that. And we just had to continue to do that, probably in a more modern or a different way. So this is why we're doing wines. What make our wines unique? I think the Atlantic. So one of the main characteristics about the Lisbon region is the Atlantic influence. As Del said, it's a very big region. It has a lot of coast. So the Atlantic influence on the wines gives the wines a really nice natural acidity, a really nice freshness, and a nice minerality. So I think that is something that is very relevant to our wines. But how does Pinto interpret that? Because I think that it's not just about the region. I think what makes a producer different from the neighbor, even if you have the same postcode, is the way that you interpret. So I always put man as part of the definition of the terroir, because we talk about the clay limestone soils, about altitude, precipitation, temperature variation, all that is very important. But I would say that the Atlantic influence and the will of man to choose the grapes that my father chose to plant, the way that we decided that we wanted to do the style of our wines, which are very very creamy, have a really nice mouthfeel, then that is sustained by the Atlantic influence. So they are big wines in the mouth, especially on the whites. They're big wines, but are sustained by the Atlantic. So they're very, very fruit friendly. The reds are very vivid. The reds are very Lisbon. What does that mean? Is that they're very crisp. They're very fresh. They have a beautiful aging capacity. They're very vibrant. So this is what the region gives and what we interpret. We have 27 different grapes planted at the estate. And of course, being a Portuguese and being a Lisbon producer, of course, the most dominant grapes are the Lisbon regional indigenous and the Portuguese indigenous grapes. But there's also a place for some French grapes, namely from the Côte du Rhône, because my father, he loves that style of wine. So what makes our wines different is that we take this Rhône style mouthfeel and we give it a Lisbon touch and we blend them with the Lisbon grapes. So I think that's one of the most characteristic things about our wines, is that we tend to blend Portuguese indigenous and Lisbon indigenous grapes with some international grapes. Yeah, I think that's one of the most relevant things that we do. And of course, as you said, we do a very conscious viticulture. I'm very aware that the wine is made in the vineyard. I know it's kind of a cliche to say so. I always say that we do pedicure and manicure on the vineyards. My women, we have a group of women that work with us all year round. And it's predominantly women that work in our estate. It's not a feminist thing. It's just it just happens to be that way. And we do a lot of hand work, very labor intensive in the vineyard. Because when the grapes go in the cellar, we tend to just, I'm always joking with Pedro, the winemaker, saying, if you don't touch, you know, just don't touch the grapes, things will happen in a good way. So we believe that with the care that we have in the viticulture and the expression of the land that we have, that our wines do express what we intend to show in a more rational, with less, we don't use herbicide, as less pesticides than we can. And by blending all these different grapes in the cellar, there are no added yeast. So it's indigenous fermentation. The cellar is in cement tanks. So that too does help on this mouthfeel and this roundness and this full body that we want to convey in our wines. So yeah, everything is this is how we interpret, and this is how we wanted to show our wines. And so it's very much a fingerprint of our family's personal taste, uplifted by the Atlantic region influence. I mean,
I have so many questions I want to ask you. Going back to one of the things that you said, is the style of wine or maybe the grapes. So how would you describe your wines in relation to sort of, you had mentioned Côte du Rhône. Are they similar to Côte du Rhône, or what makes them, what gives them that special like Lisbon or Portuguese feel?
They are more fresh and more crisp. And we, curiously, like we have a Marsanne, Roussanne and Viognier blend. And when we compare them to the original blends, ours have a little bit more salinity. They have a little bit more minerality, so they're fresher when we do the comparison. And again, our intention isn't to do weird. Our intention is not to be the Portuguese Côte du Rhône, because we are actually called that. Our intention is that this was a personal preference of my father, that when we started to blend these grapes with Arinto, with Fernão Pires, when we started to blend Syrah with Touriga Nacional and Tinta Miúda, we found that they were very unique, and they went very well, and they were very unique. So it was by blending them with our indigenous grapes that we found that there was a differentiating point.
And then you had mentioned too, the natural yeast, the natural fermentation, cement tanks. Mm-hmm. I'd love to know a little bit more about that and how that makes your wines unique. That natural, I love the idea too of like not touching them. Let's leave them alone and let nature do what it does best. So would love a little bit more about how that impacts the wines.
So this do not touch the grapes philosophy. No, it again, going back to, we believe that we have good fruit. So we believe that we have healthy and distinct grapes. Healthy, of course, and by distinct, not only by the diversity of grapes that we have, but by also because we do microzoning. So within a certain grape, for instance, we have two plots of Arinto, which is a typical Lisbon grape. And in the past, what we do is that we do the upper plot and the lower plot, fermenting separate. And with the passing of the years and with more and more knowledge about tasting and knowing about the vineyards, we found that, imagine, the left bank was more mature than the right bank. So we'd harvest the left bank and then the right bank. And it got to a point now where we do microzoning. It means that we study subplots. So now what we do is kind of chaotic. It is that we do the upper, imagine the upper left part with the lower right part, and then we join the center. And then in another vat, we do the upper right part to join it. So it's a kind of a Tetris in combination. But what do we do? What do we want to do with that? We want to express, if in our land, Arinto, if in a plot of Arinto, we find that there's different kinds of maturation of the grapes, and different kind of contributions that maturation can give, and then we isolate that. So from the 27 different grapes, we have up to 53 fermentations occurring in the cellar. And so at least every subplot that we find is interesting to isolate. Every subplot has a chance to prove itself. If it gets to the end of the fermentation and then the right upper part tastes and is very much analytically like the upper left part, okay, then we can join them. But at least at the beginning, they have an opportunity to just show themselves in their plenitude. And this is also possible because of the cellar that we have. So our cellar is from 1889. So it wasn't built by us. So I can brag my cellar as I wish because I didn't do it. So I didn't. But what is very particular to our cellar is, so in the past, all the cellars were of cement, so of concrete, so nothing different from there. But all the deposits were very, very big deposits because at the time, wine was, you know, field blends and there were no isolation of grapes. And you know, I think wine was treated like another of the culture. Like there were pears at the estate, there were apples, there were nuts, and they do wine, but, you know, just put everything all together in big vats. But curiously, whoever conceived, thought, and built this cellar had an epiphany that many, you know, in 2003, they would become a Pinto family that we want to need a small cement deposits. And that's what's very unique about our cellar is that we have a batch of 4,000 liter, 8,000 liter, 12,000 liter, 15,000 liter. So we have a whole corridor of all these smaller deposits that we can use in this micro zoning. So again, it was kind of that, yes, as you were, that was destiny. I think that was destiny, is that we wanted to do something that is possible with what is inside, that what was there inside the cellar. And this no yeast philosophy is my father is very much against chemicals. And I talk about my father and his philosophy a lot because as I told you, I didn't know anything about wine. I didn't even like wine. So I started to go into the business very much, learning what was there. And what was there is what my father had envisioned. So, you know, I think I learned by, okay, this is how you do it. I had no idea. Only when I started to meet other producers and going back to school, did I see that, okay, we do this, but probably this can be done in another way, or other producers do it in another way. But this horror that my father has against chemicals is, again, because he believes in the quality of the grapes. And if we need to correct the grapes, if we need to correct the blend, we have 27 different grapes. So imagine if we need a little bit more of acidity, then we can put a little bit more of Arinto, or we can put a little bit more of Viuzinho. If we need a little bit more mouthfeel in a red wine or more red fruit, we can put a little bit more of Tinta Roriz. So internally, we can like kind of auto-correct the wine instead of doing this chemical intervention. And of course, it's not easy. The first grapes that do go inside the cellar, you know, they don't start spontaneously to ferment. You know, that in the first days we're like praying for them to start fermenting. But once the first vat starts fermenting, then that passes on to the other vats too. But again, the idea of this is to preserve the authenticity of a place. My father has the idea that if we inoculate with all this yeast, then our wines will be exactly like our neighbors, which is, I don't think it's exactly like that. It's not as radical as that. But again, we do have good fruit. And also it has happened, and I won't lie, it has happened that some vats have not gotten to the end of the fermentation, because when it's spontaneous fermentation, the fermentation can go on for weeks and it can go, you know, to any kind of direction. There's not a control when it begins, when it ends. And so there have been some vats that haven't gone the way that we wanted, and that's okay. And that's an investment that my father is willing to take. That's a risk he's willing to take to make sure that it's more authentic than more chemically intervened.
It's so fascinating. I like just want to try your wine so badly now. amazing. Really amazing. One more question, because you sent me some notes. You talked a little bit about slow winemaking. Can you talk a little bit more about what slow winemaking is and why you like it so much?
I think it's the art of waiting. The art of waiting is something that's been around our family for quite some time, in the sense that my father, he had to wait for my mother. He had to, you know, date her for a long time to marry her. It took my parents many years to build their first house. It took my father quite some years, took him 5 years to negotiate buying this estate. And what we find is that this Atlantic influence on the wines gives the wines the capacity to age. And if you have young red wine from our estate, like if you have, we're in 2023, if you could imagine to drink a bottled wine, a red wine from Quinto Pinto, from like last year's vintage, it's undrinkable. It's too harsh. It's too aggressive. So it needs time in barrel. It needs time in cement. Okay. And it needs time in bottle. And that's the beauty of it, is that we wait for the wines. That's the art of waiting. And so this slow winemaking is about that, is that we wait for the optimal time of maturation of the grape. And we wait for the fermentation to occur in the way and in the days that it needs to occur. And then we wait for the wine to be ready in bottle. And we only launch the wines when they are ready to be drank. That's very clear to us. That if we release older vintages, we prefer to do that and an optimal drinking point than having people, you know, just giving people wines that are not ready to be drunk.
It's such a unique approach. It's about, like you said, it's about making sure the wines are ready rather than just pushing to production, rather than just focusing on, no, we got to get something out. It's really about the quality, the artistry of the wine, and making sure that it's going to be ready when it hits somebody's lips.
Yeah, exactly. And people say, oh, but that's a lot of cash. You know, that's a lot of stock. It probably hurt the first year, but it's been the philosophy since ever. So, you know, that's the way we've built the business. So it doesn't hurt anymore.
So I want to change the subject just a little bit. Mm-hmm. I am really loving the things that you're saying, because interspersed in what you talk about, you mentioned Sunday night dinner. So we'll talk about that in a minute. You talk about your family a lot. And, I, you know, these are things that for Carmela and me, my wife and I, we, you know, it's very much about family, Sunday night dinners, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So you work with your family. I'm sure there are some fun and funny aspects of working with your family. You can tell me because nobody else is going to listen, but is there anybody in your family who's hard to work with? Nobody will hear it. Nobody will
hear it. No one will hear that. Are you sure? So I work with my father and my sister. So they're both very difficult to work with. I'm very difficult to work with.
No, what is it? I tease, but what is it like to work with them? Like, what's special about being able to work with them?
I think it's not easy. It's not, to be honest, it's not easy because, as you said, we are still all together. And being a Portuguese family, we are always very much together. So this Latin part of us is like my father, you know, his dream is that my father, and my mother, their dream is that we live all in the same building. You know, like they have a very big dining room and we all come for dinner and for lunch and for dinner every day. Like I go into my parents' house and you're coming for, like, I'm going for lunch and he's asking if I'm staying for dinner. Look, Dad, I haven't even come for lunch. So sometimes it can be a little too intense. Okay. What happens is that my father has a specific role in the company. So he is more on the production side. And I run the business as a whole. And Anna is, my sister, is more on the sales side. So we do have, you know, I do the link between them and we have a lot of respect for each other. But there is a very thin line that you can't always bring the business into Sunday lunch, dinner. Because out of respect for my mother, that she's also involved in the business very back in the backstage, but also out of respect of our spouses and out of respect for our kids, that it's fun to talk about wine. But normally when you discuss, it's not always the good things. It's about the one things that you're worried about. So there we had to set a time and a place to do that. So it's not easy. It took us a while to define the time and space to discuss this. But there's something that I think is beautiful. There's the joy that we celebrate. I still, till today, and I honestly say this, till today, if I go into a restaurant and I see a bottle of our wine at the table, I blush. And when I, you know, when I meet my parents or my sister, I say, there, you know, we listed this wine at this place. And I'm still happy. And we all rejoice with that. Something that I think is also very beautiful is that we have my son and my daughters and my nieces and nephew. They're involved in the business too, in the way that in the harvest, because they're on holiday, they come and harvest with us. So they too participate. And sometimes when I'm, you know, when I have wine fairs, for instance, in Lisbon, my kids come to visit, you know, come to say hi, be at the stand for a bit. And so they understand how the whole process, that there's the selling process too. And specifically one of my daughters, every time I travel, said, did you sell wine? Did people like our wine? Did you sell well? So it's lovely that they're also involved. So going back to your question, it's not easy because there's a thin line between, even when you're discussing, you know, when you're discussing something that's a little bit more unpleasant, because they're family, sometimes you tend to be more unpleasant than if it were just a worker. You know, your words come out of your mouth and your attitude is less ceremonial than it should be. But also the part of the sharing and the joy is beautiful. So I think it's a good balance. Not every day easy, but it's a good balance.
Yeah, I can tell you have a lot of pride, and there is that. There's that special connection of being with family that's just different. You mentioned your children. Do you want your children to join in the family business, like once they're older? Do you, you know, how do you feel about that?
My eldest son, he just turned 18, which is in Portugal is majority. And when he was small, he wanted to be a tractor driver. So that was his objective. I want to be the tractor driver. He's changed now. So his teen years have drifted him a little bit out of the estate. And my kids, the girls work a lot during the harvest. They work a lot, many, many hours picking. So they're amazing. I can't lie saying that would I like them to join the business if they want to. I have to be as smart and as delicate and as care, you know, be very careful as my father was. Because if you put that, if I say, like, I do ask them to come and help out at the harvest, obviously. But, you know, that's their holidays and then it's a specific time. But if I put the pressure of, oh, this is your business, this is what I'm going to leave you, I think that is a pressure. Imagine that they don't want to do this. You know, imagine that, you know, they want to be a philosophy teacher or, you know, or whatever. If there's that weight that, so there's the family, that business that I have to take care of, I think that's a lot of weight that shouldn't be there. If I do find out somewhere along the way, or if they find out, not me, if they find out somewhere along the way that they want to join this business, I would first, you know, ask them to go to, you know, other wine companies or travel the wine world to see different practices so that they have a more critical opinion about it and not just, you know, like me. I learned wine with what I saw my father do. And I want my kids, if they come, if my kids or my nephews, of course, or my nieces, if they want to come, first go and see how it's made and then you can come. Because it's very difficult, to be honest, I think it's very difficult to leave a family business because you have to sit at the table with them on Sunday, you know, and then there's like, if you leave the business, you feel like, oh gosh, you're breaking part of the family, which is not, it's a business. It's not, you know, it's a family business, but there's a part that's a family, that's a part that's a business. So I would be very happy if the next generation, you know, comes along, and I kind of think that they will. I mean, they are already 8 grandchildren, so and a 9th is on the way. So one of them may, I hope. I hope, but I can't say I won't pressure them, but I hope that consciously I will never pressure them to do so.
Rita, I just feel there's so many things that are resonating with me and what you're talking about. I'll just say really quickly, for Carmela and I, our 2 oldest children went away for college, and they're still away. They're in grad school right now. And there's nothing that tears up my wife more than the fact that they're not here with us. But I think my philosophy is sort of similar, which is let them do what they want to do, and they'll come back when they're ready, and they won't feel that pressure. And so that's what I'm hoping that's the right thing to do. So maybe I'm with you. Maybe we'll check in a few years and see if we made the right choice there.
Yes. The Americans have a very different philosophy than the Portuguese. So, you know, your kids leave home to study to college. Here in Portugal, we tend to leave home only when we marry. So we get to have our kids longer.
We
get to have them a little bit. It's changing. It's now changing because now many kids are going to study abroad. But in my generation, no. So we get to keep our kids closer, hopefully a little bit longer than you.
Yeah. Well, one thing that we do have in common, as my wife and I come from Italian backgrounds, we do Sunday night dinner. So we do that as well. It's a tradition. It's more on my wife's side of the family, but it's a tradition. So I think I want to go to your Sunday night dinner. I'm not sure I'm invited, but you, when you come to Seattle, you are invited, and Dale and Stephen as well. You're invited to come to Sunday night dinner. So Rita,
I can't cook, so I'll just bring the wine. Okay,
that's not my thing. That's fine.
That's my mother's thing.
No, we like to cook. Well, we like to cook. We make obviously. Sort of Italian influenced food. So if when we have you over for dinner and you bring your wine, what wine are you going to bring to us?
Oh, wow. Okay. Can I bring 2?
You can bring as many of your wines as you want. So, but tell us which ones you'd bring.
Thinking of how the other round, if you came to the estate, how could I explain the estate and the project to you? So I'd start with a Lisbon blend, which is the Lasso blend. I'd start with that because that's a typical Lisbon blend. It's a white wine, and I think it's very, very typical of the region. So I think that's the most indigenous blend that we make. And then I'd go on to one of the blends that we do that blend these Portuguese indigenous, Lisbon indigenous with the international grapes. And probably I'd take like a single varietal of a Portuguese grape. So actually 3. See, you asked 1.
No, I'll take 3.
2, and I'm coming 3.
I'm not turning them back. No, we'll take the 3. The last thing I just wanted to ask is, well, actually there's 2 things. So I want to know how we can find your wines, how our listeners can find your wines, and Dale and Stephen will ask you to jump in to help. And then you had also mentioned, Rita, I want to get to this, that you are launching some wine tourism and you're getting ready to do overnight accommodations at your estate. So would love to hear about that as well. But let's start first with how people can find your wines and also follow.
So in the states, so we are present in some states. We're present in Arizona, obviously. We're present in California and Colorado and Washington, D.C. And hopefully during the course of the next years, we'll be present in many more states. But specifically in Arizona, I think, Dale, you'll have to jump in now to see where NOSA imports can where can they be found?
Absolutely. So we are in that we are a company with we actually just had our first birthday, so we're new. We are in Arizona in most of the independent shops. We're sold through a distributor that's called Maverick. And through Maverick, we have a pretty wide network. For your listeners, Joe, I would say that for people that are living in Arizona, if they want to reach out to their local liquor store, they will be able to source these wines through Maverick. We are, because of course, timing is hilarious. Sometimes we are in talks with two direct-to-consumer online stores that we're not allowed to talk about yet, but that should be launching in hopefully in about a month's time. And with that, what we can do also is make sure that we get you that information for when this episode is up. So it can be maybe in some of the descriptions. Within the next year, we will be launching in 6 new states. So we're focusing to the west of the Mississippi, but we're working very quickly and very hard on making sure we have those direct-to-consumer chains set up, because as we all know, it's a lot easier to just click a button and have something show up at your doorstep. So yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah, let us know, because we will want to share that information. And hopefully Washington State is on your list too, because that's where we are.
It's high on the list.
It is very high on the list.
And also, please, if anyone's interested in tasting Hita's wines that are amazing, please feel free to reach out to us. Our contact information is on our website, and we'd be happy to
facilitate
as best we can. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just info@nosaimports.com for where anybody's based, and we can figure out how to get those wines out to you.
Great. And I'll put that information in our show notes as well, so people can get that.
Awesome.
And then Rita, tell us a little bit more about the accommodations.
So about the accommodation is that we've always done tastings and lunches at the estate. And what we find is that the house is beautiful and there are rooms available. And we wanted to give that experience also to be in a more rural environment. So we're now finishing the investments on some refurbishing on the house that we had to do to make sure that the accommodation is more comfortable. It's still a very rural and it's still a very old house, but to make it pleasurable for people to sleep there. So we've been investing in that. In the mid future, we're going to do also, there's a ruin in the middle of the vineyard that we're also going to develop in for a family accommodation. Because the manor house is more for, I would say, more adults, and mm-hmm. the family houses will be more for families, as Nem says. And then hopefully we will open another, when part of another room will open another small hotel. But all this is planned for the future. You have to have something to dream for, something to, you know, to aspire to. So we do have plans to grow, not only in representation in countries and in sales of wines, bottles, but also to grow in this hospitality that I think is very much needed in wine. And it makes sense. People, you know, they want to come to a place and enjoy and stay, and that elevates the wine, and the wine can also bring in a reason for accommodation, so they can go hand by hand.
And I'm if I may jump into, just for the sake of saying it, for any of your listeners that haven't been to the Lisbon region, which encompasses a lot more than just the city of Lisbon, to be eloquent, it's bonkers stunning. it's sort of, if anyone were ever just to say the word idyllic countryside, this is what would pop into your head. It's absolutely gorgeous. And the vineyard management on the property as well, it's just so full of flora and fauna. And it's one of the most beautiful wineries that I can really think of for receiving. So for the sake of adding that in, for Rita being humble.
And I think we're very lucky in the place that we are, the location. When we're about an hour's drive from Lisbon, we're very close to, we're 25 kilometers from the sea. So we're very close to the sea. There are a lot of golf courses. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of to see around Lisbon, Sintra, Cascais, Lisbon, Fatima. So there's lots to see in an hour around the estate. So it is quite interesting. So we can complement, you know, there can be wines in the evening, and you can do some very interesting tourism in the morning. So there's room for all. It's good. It's interesting. Do come.
Sounds amazing. I'm going to start booking our flight. No, it sounds amazing. Well, thank you so much. I'm just before we go, you can find Rita at It's Quinta de Pinto Wines correct? Exactly. At Instagram and Facebook. Is that right?
Exactly. That is correct. Yeah. And that's also the name of the website. Yeah.
Great. And then NOSA is NOSA Imports at Instagram and also NOSAImports.com, correct?
Correct. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, can't thank you enough. Wonderful stories. Can't wait to taste your wine. It sounds wonderful. And visit and have you over for Sunday night dinner and all that fun stuff.
I'll be there.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Great. Yeah, Dale, Stephen, you let us know when you're in Seattle. We'll have you over.
Absolutely. We would. We definitely will. That's coming up on the books in the next few months. So we'll.
Awesome. Well, good. Very good. Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. We look forward
to hearing more and sharing more information as it comes out with the, as you expand and as the estate is ready for people to stay. So thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Take care. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. We want to thank you very much for listening to our interview with Rita Pinto from Quinta do Pinto Wines and Dale and Stephen Ott from NOSA Imports. Just in case you are worried about memorizing all this, don't worry. You can find out all of this information on our website, thewinepairpodcast.com. In our show notes for this episode, just go to the website, look for this episode, click on the show notes, and you'll find out in all this information. And you can find out where to follow Rita and find out more information about Quinta do Pinto Winery, but here is some information on Facebook and Instagram. They are at Quinta, that's Q-U-I-N-T-A D-O-P-I-N-T-O-W-I-N-E-S. That's Quinta do Pinto Wines. And their website is quintadopinto.pt. So that's Quinta do Pinto.pt. And you can find and follow Dale and Stephen Ott and NOSA Imports on Instagram at NOSA Imports. That's NOSSAImports. And on their website, NOSAImports.com. Again, NOSSAImports.com. Okay, we hope that you had a good time. We hope you enjoyed this interview as much as we did. And we hope you'll subscribe to our podcast. And we hope you'll follow us and leave a nice rating and review and all that kind of fun stuff. And follow us on Instagram as well. And we look forward to hearing from you and maybe hearing about some other wines or wineries that you're interested in. And remember, as we like to say, life is short, so stop drinking shitty wine. And we'll see you next time on one of our normal episodes. Bye-bye. I hunger for your touch.